This week on Straight Talk Africa, U.S. forces are withdrawing from Niger and Chad. From its bases in Niger, the U.S. monitored the movement of extremist groups in the region. Will the monitoring of terror groups come to an end? Does the absence of the United States from the region mean that Russia and China will take hold? If so, will the United States have a role in the Sahel? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA headquarters here in Washington. I'm Vincent McCourty. In the last 5 years, the Sahel has been marked with coups and jihadism resurgence. In 2022, the escalating conflict and deteriorating security situation in the region forcibly displaced 4.1 million people in that region, according to the United Nations Refugee Agency. Chad and Niger have been crucial to the efforts of the United States to counter violent extremist organizations. But Niger's ruling junta ended an agreement last month that allowed U.S. troops to operate in the country. Their withdrawal is expected to be completed by September 15th. In Chad, the U.S. military plans to return for talks about revising an agreement that allows it to keep troops in the country. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has more on how the withdrawal affects the counterterror mission in the region.
A U.S. military official has told VOA that U.S. and Nigerian leaders agreed American forces will begin a phased withdrawal from Niger in the coming months, after being in the country for over a decade. The official added that participants in negotiations this week confirmed protections and immunities for U.S. personnel. Officials in Niger also approved diplomatic clearances for the withdrawal flights to ensure smooth entries and exits during the pullout of U.S. forces, who were in the country to help local militaries combat Islamist terrorists in the Sahel.
Countries like Mali, like Niger, like Nigeria, Burkina Faso, these have seen an expansive rise in jihadist movements. These are some of the most dangerous areas in the world.
The United States spent more than $100 million building a drone base near the central Nigerian city of Agadez to surveil Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, and other terror groups. Because of the withdrawal, the U.S. base will end its drone surveillance there about 5 years after drone operations began.
Niger was somewhat of a rarity in the sense that it had one of the few democratically elected governments in the region, and also a democratically elected government that was friendly to the U.S. and willing to host a U.S. military presence. And so finding a replacement for that, for a military base, is going to be somewhat difficult.
Martinez McKine says the U.S. will likely reach out to neighboring Chad to base more American troops following Chad's presidential election earlier this month. Chad and the U.S. are currently reviewing their security cooperation agreements.
We're going to continue to stay engaged with the partners in the region when it comes to terrorism and countering the terrorist threat. Because again, you know, I think we all collectively can work together to address those very real threats.
The withdrawal is seen as a huge blow to the U.S. counterterror fight.
Well, that was Carla Babb, VOA Pentagon correspondent. We reached out to her for more insight into the U.S. forces withdrawal. Carla, why is the U.S. withdrawing from Niger, and is this going to be a complete withdrawal?
Vincent, officials tell me that all indications are that this is going to be a full withdrawal. So why is the U.S. withdrawing from Niger, you asked? It basically boils down to two distinct disputes. First of all, Niger wants to supply Iran with uranium. The United States does not think this is a very good idea. Iran is the number one state sponsor of terrorism. Anything that Nigerians could do to help improve Iran's nuclear situation is not something the U.S. is going to agree with or be okay with. The second dispute is over Russia. Niger wanted to bring Russian forces in to help with their security situation. And the U.S. is completely at odds with Russia right now. The Russian military invaded its neighbor, Ukraine, which is something that is illegal under international law. There is an international coalition led by the United States of more than 50 partners funneling weapons and equipment into Ukraine so that Ukraine can fight off the Russian invaders. So any scenario where the United States military was going to be working with the Russian military on security was not going to happen. So because of those two things, the U.S. and Niger agreed that it was time to withdraw U.S. forces.
And exactly what kind of operations did the U.S. conduct through the bases in Niger?
Well, the U.S. used the two bases in Niger to surveil terror groups in the region. According to the Global Terror Index, the Sahel is one of the deadliest places in the world. More than half of the deaths caused by terrorists were in the Sahel region last year. And so the United States has been using those two bases to watch these groups and help local militaries fight these groups off.
Is the U.S. actually considering the use or at least the creation of other bases in the Sahel to conduct similar operations in the near future?
Well, yes, I'm sure the United States is considering other basing options in the region as we speak, but it's unclear if that's going to come to fruition. And here's why. I mean, it took a lot of money. We're talking over $100 million to build just one of those bases in Niger, plus hundreds of millions of dollars to maintain those two bases in Niger over several years. The U.S. established a presence and pulled out just a few years later. So it's unclear if, even though the United States may have the will and another partner in the region may have the will to move the drone and surveillance operations to another country, it's unclear how soon or if that will even happen, because Congress, U.S. Congress has to approve the funds for this. And after seeing what happened in Niger and seeing all of the political instability in the region, I mean, one analyst referred to the Sahel region as the coup belt because there's been so many coups recently. With all of this going on, it's unclear if Congress will have the appetite to put another base in the region.
Now, analysts are presenting the withdrawal as a serious blow to the U.S. counterterrorism fight. What does the Pentagon say about this development?
Well, yes, the Pentagon also says that this is a huge blow to the counterterror fight. I mean, I told you earlier about just how deadly the terror groups are in the Sahel. And without a local option to be able to launch drones and surveil these terror groups, the United States is going to have to fly their drones from thousands of kilometers away. We're talking maybe Italy, perhaps, or Somalia or Djibouti, in order to be able to look at these groups and help local partners try to get to the problem there. And, you know, the problem with that is, before, with a base in Niger, you were in the thick of the fight. As soon as the drone went up, it could instantly start targeting these terror groups and watching them. But if they're having to launch drones from thousands of kilometers away, most of the flight time isn't spent watching the terrorist. It's spent trying to get to the terrorist. So this is indeed a huge problem for the United States moving forward.
Well, thank you, Carla. This was Carla Bam, VOA's Pentagon correspondent. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we will go to our expert analysts for more insight into what the role of the United States will be in the Sahel after the withdrawal of its forces from Niger.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
The African warrior queen, the black princess, or other super heroes with afros are growing in popularity in comics.
This week on Our Voices, we will dive into the comic world where creators contribute to the richness and diversity of the medium through their art in ways that resonate with all races and genders. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
We are discussing the withdrawal of U.S. forces from Niger and Chad and how it will impact America's presence in the region. Joining me to discuss this issue is Kamisa Kamara, Senior Advisor for Africa at the U.S. Institute of Peace, Professor of Practice at the University of Michigan and former Minister of Foreign Affairs of Mali. I'm also joined by Kweku Nwoma, Senior Professorial Lecturer on Peace, Human Rights and Cultural Relations at American University. Kamisa and Kweku, welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Now, you know, for the longest time, especially since we started hearing about agitation in the Sahel region, there was all this talk about the Sahel countries and some of the West African countries want the French out of the way. They want them out of their region. Now, where did the issue with the United States come in? Some of our viewers may want to understand this. If I may begin with you, Professor Kamara.
Yes, so it's a difficult issue to even discuss, a very complex one. I believe that when we look at the spate of coups, which started in the Sahel in 2020, we've had four or five countries in the region who have experienced coups in cascade. And so the military juntas who came into power have looked at those defense partnerships which had been signed and approved by their previous regimes, which had recently been toppled. And they have somehow decided that it was best for their regime survival to get rid of the French and then the United States. So the point I'm trying to make is that the security partnerships, as important as they might be for the countries of the Sahel, are now being dismantled based on political considerations. And this is the aspect that we are sometimes overlooking. The security situation in the region is dire. There is definitely a need for international assistance to help the national armies to fight off the terrorist threat. But then you need political support and you need a stable political government in order to work collaboratively with these foreign assistance powers.
Yes. Now, actually, just within that kind of a context, Professor Nwoma, we know that the U.S. has said that it's attempting to create a new military agreement that will kind of, to some degree, work on some kind of options to have a revised deal. So what is that? And actual details may not have been given, but what could it be that will be palatable to the juntas or the people of the Sahel region that would allow the U.S. to continue staying in the Sahel region?
So I think with Niger, their ship has already sailed because once the Russians got there, it became untenable for the United States to remain. But with a place like Chad, there is a way back because Chad has just had some kind of an election and the United States can say, well, they're on their way to restoring constitutional rules so we can reestablish relations with them. Also, remember that ECOWAS has stepped away from enforcing its anti-coup norms. So even in Niger, the coup itself may not be an obstacle, but the presence of Russia and the Nigerian government's decision to engage with Iran, those become obstacles for the United States. The United States will not get around that. I think that in the short term, they're going to try and move some, the drone bases to some other places. They're looking at places like Benin, Ivory Coast, Ghana, possibly expand the presence in Niger. And in the long term, this is all going to turn on how Russia does in the region. These countries still need a lot of help. If the Russians can provide that help, then they probably don't need the United States. But if the Russians fail, then these countries are probably going to reassess their relationship, and that will provide an opening for the United States to get back in.
So, Professor Kavara, you sort of implied that what they are doing is a restructuring of the security arrangement there, and they sort of need help anyway. So is it okay to speculate that they don't necessarily have a big problem with the U.S., but they need to reestablish the engagement, the terms of the engagement? Otherwise, then somebody's going to fill up the gap or fill in that gap, as Professor Noah might say.
Well, I am 100% sure that there are no specific issues with the United States as a partner. Actually, the United States is the ideal partner in the Sahel region because of its intelligence services, because of its operational capabilities to help the national armies fight the terrorist threat. To me, again, this is a political issue. You have to remind yourself that the United States were very supportive of President Mohamed Bazoum, who was overthrown by the current military juntas. And the U.S. were very vocal for the liberation of President Bazoum. And I believe that the decision of the Niger junta to ask the United States to leave is in part because of the U.S. obvious support to their predecessor and to the President Mohamed Bazoum. So it is mainly a political decision before it is a security decision.
Mm-hmm. So in some sense here then, Professor Norma, it would appear that the situation is not necessarily similar in all the countries there, that every country has its own internal workings before you actually move on to the geopolitical landscape and even international engagements.
As it should be, because they have different needs. And actually in Niger, they've indicated that they want Americans to stay, not militarily. They want American economic presence, they want investments, and they need cooperation with the United States across a whole bunch of issues. But again, the Russian presence is also uneven. So they have a lot of troops in Mali, but not a lot in Burkina Faso or in Niger. And these countries have different problems. And the question is, can the Russians help? If the Russians cannot help, they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and reassess the relationship. I don't think that you throw the Americans out with the French, but you shouldn't do that. You know, countries, modern countries, have to figure out how to manage complex relationships. Just because you have problems with the French doesn't mean that you throw the United States out as well. Now, you rearrange the deal and you negotiate. You are sovereign state. So you come to the table and say, this is what I need. Can we work together? If we cannot work together, then we reconsider all of that. But you don't take offense at the tone of negotiations, and you don't go in there and say, well, because the Russians want us to get rid of you, you got to go, or because we have a problem with the French. I don't even think that these countries should cut off ties with France. France helped underdevelop these countries. France owes a duty to help them develop. So don't give them a free pass by asking them to go home. Let them hang around and help clean up the mess. And so these countries they really have to, you know, reassess this situation very well. And as I've already said, we don't want to become pawns in some larger geostrategic game involving the United States, China, and Russia. Africans should put their interests ahead, first and foremost, the interests of their people, not these other powers.
Mm-hmm. Now, Professor Kamara, you know, some of this development seem to have happened so suddenly, especially when governments changed. Was there a strategy, like really something that would work for each of these countries? Or as you're saying, it is kind of influenced by internal politics, and perhaps it's now the countries are trying to figure out what's the best way forward, because we know there are all these players, and in some way, some have said, they can all be in. Only that they can play their roles differently, of course, as international partners.
You've said it right. I think it's not a zero-sum game. I think everybody has a role to play, and everybody has a specific value added to bring to the table. I think the obvious value added for the United States is obviously security. But as my co-presenter said, the Niger authorities did insist that they would like for the United States to invest economically. So there are many ways in which international partners can invest in those countries. So again, it's not a zero-sum game. And I would like to think that diplomatic relationships have their ups and downs. But the most important thing that the United States will have to do in Niger, but also in the Sahel region, is to remain engaged despite the challenges, despite the difficulties. Things will change. These regimes are not there to stay forever. They will eventually go, and they will be replaced with others who might want to see the United States back.
Mm-hmm. Now, Professor Norma, we know that every country is, of course, always looking out for its own interest first. But of course, as you did mention, there's a need to help these countries. They're so underdeveloped, most of them. There's no question from the citizens in terms of how do they see, you know, the development in their backyard. And some seem to be embracing others other than the U.S. and European nations. Has there been a sort of disenchantment with the level of economic support from the West that people may feel like perhaps we want to try and look east?
Yes, because obviously the United States doesn't have the deep relationship that it should have had with Niger. So you cannot keep this relationship strictly at the security level. You got to go in deeper. You got to engage the people, the economy. So American FDI in Niger is negligible. And it doesn't make sense that you want to maintain a security relationship but not fully help them develop. But having said that, these countries also have to be careful what they do, because if you are ditching Americans for the Russians, are the Russians there to help you develop economically, or are they just there to score poker points and support, prop you up with military support and some type of security arrangement? I don't think Russia is dealing with a lot of difficulties. So Russia is the wrong country to be leaning on. The Chinese model has been interesting for Africans. Africans have been looking at China, and they tend not to be as critical as they should of how China has developed. But, you know, Africans are desperate, and any country that is growing appears to be attractive, except that, you know, the Chinese are doing on a scale that we cannot do. But there are other models out there. So hopefully what comes out of this is that there are lessons for the West as well. You cannot just go in there with security cooperation and not look at the economic development. I'm not talking about aid. The United States does aid in these places, but we need more than aid. So, you know, Niger, for example, has uranium. They have a lot of other resources. The United States should, if that relationship is important to the United States, they should help develop that stuff. Don't just go in there and build bases and then fly your drones, and then you are shocked. They couldn't even prevent the coup. They couldn't help President Bazoum, who's their guy. How did the coup happen on America's watch? You know, mm-hmm. So what kind of ally are you if you sit there and you allow a military that you have been involved with all this while to do a coup against one of your guys? So they are looking at it and saying, you know, is this relationship really helping me? Or is it just here for to help the Americans achieve their goals? But
and you know, mm-hmm. at the same time, when you're talking about the coup and intervention, there are those who would say, you know, that's also an internal matter. It could have been that, you know, there are other forces within the country. And in fact, we saw some people celebrate the coup. So maybe I just wanted Professor Kamara to kind of react a little bit or respond a little bit to what Professor Nwama said.
Yes, I sort of agree with what he said, and you know, you just added to it. I think the United States did watch, indeed, as President Bazoum was overthrown. I think it was very clear that the U.S. was delegating the handling of the crisis to the ECOWAS, which failed in Niger. And I think there were expectations, even from the ECOWAS, that the United States would help reinstate President Bazoum, by sending drones, etc. And because the U.S. had a military presence, and because the U.S. didn't do anything, sat on the sideline and let the coup happen, I think that might have contributed to a sort of loss of credibility for the U.S.'s contribution to the stability in Niger, and might have contributed also to the current situation.
Yeah.
So not to mince words here, there were mistakes that were made. I think the United States were not as vocal as they should have been, and not as straightforward as they should have been in Niger. And it was very clear that the Sahel is just not a U.S. priority.
Yeah. Professor Noam, in terms of security, the security and the future of the Sahel region, what do you see as some of the risks that we could face in this kind of a confusion where it's not very clear, really, who is working with who yet, who is supporting who at the moment?
At the root of all these problems is the failure of the states in the region to provide for their people. So economic development is very important. So again, going back to the U.S. stuff, if you are in Niger and you don't help develop the economy, you create the conditions that lead to the jihadist problem and leads to the coup. So that's the thing. If the states do not deliver, you're going to have instability in the region. In the short term, things can actually get worse in the region because the Russians are in there. It's not clear what capacity they have. They themselves are bogged down in Ukraine. And so we're not sure whether Russia is going to be able to help these countries deal with their problems. And that creates another problem. As the regimes are unable to beat back jihadis, other military adventurers may use us as an excuse to overthrow them. Mm. Because remember, some of the cases where we've seen coups, people have said, we did a coup because the government is not fighting properly. And so these are there. In Niger, Niger could actually be in line for American sanctions as it engages Iran and Russia, because the United States has not enforced secondary sanctions. But those countries that are dealing with Russia may be in line for sanctions, which will further weaken them and, you know, threaten the fragile situations that they are currently managing and create further problems. I think it's going to get worse in the short term. In the long term, hopefully the Russians can figure out some way. Yeah. But I doubt it. I really, really doubt it. I don't think Russia is strong enough for anybody to be leaning on.
I'm sure we'll continue this conversation, but we'll have to leave it there for now. Thank you both for being on the show. Kamisa Kamara, Senior Advisor for Africa at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and Kweku Nwoma, Senior Professorial Lecturer at American University. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. I'll see you next time.